Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
Oh, we got a big show on this Monday. Bill Ryder with you. We got some braggadocio. We got to admit some mistakes. We got LeBron trying to fool everybody. I've got, man, it's an honor to vote officially for the NBA Awards, and I get to do that again by midnight Eastern time tonight for the fourth or fifth time in my career. And it is by far the most stressful thing that I do because I think it really matters. It is a significant responsibility. So we're going to do this as a group. We're going to go over my ballot in an hour, and if you feel really strongly, if you're like, normally Ryder's a moron, or he's not, whatever you're thinking, but it doesn't matter. This is the time if you want to steer me in the right direction for the sake of all of these dudes. There are some tough calls. Not enough guards for the All-NBA six slots that are on there. Do you put Embiid at power forward, even though he's never played that position, to get him a higher level of honor? Where does Steph go on the five-man MVP ballot? Where does CP3 go? Who's the coach of the year? Can you, and this is something I've wrestled with toward the affirmative, vote for Nate McMillan, even though he's coached half the year, on one of the three slots for coach of the year, coach of the Hawks? We'll get into all that stuff. We will, again, luxuriate in the, incompetence is the word I'm looking for, of Matt Nagy. Just fire him. Just fire him. Just fire him. How about that we do that? How about QB? Cool. QB1. Awesome. Awesome. How about head coach 0? How's that sound? Why don't you tattoo that on your forehead? Anyway, we'll hit that later in the program. And a lot of NBA today. As executive producer Tom DiBenedetto, a massively talented dude, producer underscore Tom on Twitter, said it is in a lot of ways a national holiday for NBA fans. And one of the things that is really exciting and really interesting is the potential chaos that's going to ensue. And chaos may be the wrong term, probably bleeds over from inept and inaccurate, including by me, comparisons to the NCAA tournament. Maybe the term I'm looking for, maybe the thing that makes me feel alive about these NBA playoffs is the competitiveness we're about to experience. We'll hit this at the end of this hour, I think. But just a little teaser for you. Outside of Philly and who they're going to play, undecided, and outside of the Nets, probably, and who they're going to play, every other opening round playoff matchup, including 1-8 and 2-7 in the Western Conference, has a situation where it's very possible, in some cases probable, there's going to be an upset. Be a hell of a lot of fun. But the reason we don't know in either conference, 1-8 or 2-7, is because we've got this play-in tournament that mad genius, Adam Silver, unleashed on us. And there's a lot of things that have made that a success story already. The competitiveness. When's the last time, honestly, you watched the final weekend of the NBA regular season with rapt attention? Almost every game mattered. Almost every game was significant. Hell, I think Hawks-Knicks, again, we'll get to it later, I think that is a barn burner of a series. Because I think both of those teams, both of those improbable contenders, not only can win that series, I think there's a scenario where they can be, I don't know about the Heat of last year, I'm not sure finals run, but maybe the Trailblazers of a few years ago where you make a conference finals run and you set your franchise ablaze with this hope and this catalyst maybe for the future. Pretty exciting stuff. But that play-in tournament, Adam Silver's genius, has given us Warriors-Lakers as the 7-8 play-in. And just a friendly reminder, because it's confusing, right? No judgment. If you don't get it, it's new. The way this works is that the 7 and the 8 play each other in a one-game winner-take-all scenario. LeBron versus Steph, as it turns out, the first or second best player of all time against the 6th to 13th best player of all time. And the winner of that game, that team, the victorious team, is the 7th seed. Poor Phoenix Suns. And the loser plays the winner of this, where it gets a little tricky, right? Separately, same day, 9 and 10 are going to play each other, Memphis and San Antonio. And the winner of that game will play the loser of the big game, of the Warriors-Lakers game, for who gets the 8th seed. And it's going to be thrilling. And by the way, my gut instinct, I got to ask this on CBS Sports HQ last night. I'll be doing a lot of that, by the way. If you like NBA talk, if you want live analysis, if you want gambling picks, basically nonstop for the next 2.5 months, I'll be on CBS Sports HQ, including today, 3 Eastern, and then tomorrow after every single, basically every single day after every game. In fact, I'm probably going back to New York City. Here's something I didn't predict. I live in L.A. The assumption was the place to be, for me, right, would be, especially in a time where it's more difficult to travel for obvious reasons, that I would be in Los Angeles, California, Clippers, Lakers. But it really feels like, as we make plans, the gravitational pull is Nets and Knicks. Maybe in New York City over the next few weeks. Pretty exciting stuff. Center of the universe, at least for the next few days, is going to be LeBron versus Steph. And my gut instinct that I was asked about on CBS Sports HQ was, who do I like in that game? Everything should tell you that the Lakers are the favorites, I said. And it turns out the Lakers are the favorites. Lines just dropped about 7 minutes ago, and the Lakers open as 6.5-point favorites, which, by the way, I'm going to hammer the Warriors. I'm just telling you right now, I'm going to hammer the Warriors. I'm going to bet an uncomfortable amount of money on Golden State. Not because the Lakers can't beat them by 20, they can, but because I think the percentage odds that Anthony Davis is going to be banged up in a serious way are significant in what can happen. You saw him limp off out of the game, and I don't say it lightly, but the dude really is Humpty Dumpty. There's a lot of guys in the NBA this year who can't stay healthy. There's a lot of reasons for that. We've hit them throughout the show. But the fragility of AD is real. LeBron James, in his brief return back, has looked like LeBron James. And I'm not going to make the mistake of calculating, assuming, thinking he's going to get hurt in the postseason. But if there's ever a time that was going to happen, this is the year. And there's just a lack of continuity for the Lakers that matters. Now, the Lakers do have a secret weapon outside of LeBron James that I think gives them a real chance to be a dynamic force in the playoffs. Feels like when they get there. Do any of us really believe the loser of Warriors-Lakers is also going to lose to Memphis or the Spurs? I don't. But it's one game. You roll an ankle. Some guy named Ja goes off for way too many points. Crazy stuff can happen. But the secret sauce here, as one of my bosses likes to say, I have 39 of them, so it'd be hard to guess which one, for the Lakers is they have, somewhat quietly, and through the injuries to LeBron and AD, they have finished the regular season with the best defensive rating in the NBA. And that often correlates to championship success or getting really close. You got the best defense, you got a chance. And while their offense is lackluster, it's 24th, those numbers are obviously skewed by AD's injuries and LeBron's injuries. And yet something about the Warriors has me really optimistic that they're going to find their way not just to that 7th seed, but a great series against Phoenix. A lot of it's Steph Curry. Won the scoring title on the final day. In an hour, I'll let you know. I am anguished over where he goes on my MVP ballot. The top slot's really easy. It's really easy. So when you fill out these ballots, or at least for me, I do it in a Google Doc, right? And I'll officially fill it out in probably an hour after the show. When you do it, you start with MVP, and you tend to go in a pretty particular order. And so this year was like the easiest year, where MVP, number one, Nikola Jokic, pretty simple. And then literally everything after that, maybe not rookie of the year, everything after that is excruciating. All defense, excruciating. And like all NBA third team matters. And here's why I take this really seriously. Donovan Mitchell's a great example. There aren't enough slots for guards. Injured, right, a little bit at the end of the season. Donovan Mitchell making an all-NBA team this year. And so my vote is a small percentage of them. I think it's 1%. I think it's 100 of us. Somewhere in that range. Is worth, I think it's $26 million that he can or can't earn over the course of his next contract. It's not a small decision. You don't just be like, I don't care. Really, really tough. And Steph's place in some of these things is fascinating. And I kind of chuckle because I covered LeBron James in Miami. Feel like I have a pretty good sense of his psychology. After, and I'm going to play this sound here in a second. After I got done covering LeBron that first year in Miami, it occurred to me, really the whole time, how incredibly bright the guy is. The guy is really smart. Really smart. And that manifests itself in a lot of ways, including it's an innate ability. Manipulate is wrong. It encompasses what I want to say, but it's not the entirety of it. His innate ability to control his brand and the narrative. He was so bad at it when he rose off that up in that stage and said, not six, not seven. It's almost like he was so humiliated by defeat, he would never experience that again in the arena of public opinion. So I'm going to play this clip from LeBron. And it does encapsulate the greatness of Steph. And then when we get back from hearing LeBron talk about their upcoming matchup, I'm going to tell you why what LeBron is saying is hot garbage and really LeBron praising himself.
We're playing versus, in my opinion, the MVP of our league this year and Steph. So you can look what he's done this year. I mean, there's nobody, everybody counting him out this year. Everybody saying that, now that, you know, Clay is hurt, can Steph lead a team? On his own. What is he going to be able to do? Can he carry a team on his own? Can he carry a team into the postseason? Can he keep a team afloat? he's done that and more.
Everything he said is true, except for the fact he's the MVP. And I saw it last night, and it bothered me. And I'm pretty sure I had some weird dreams last night. You know, note to self, don't eat. And it's amazing, but don't eat Greek food at, you know, midnight after doing a bunch of NBA work. That's the tzatziki gets in your brain. Some weird things happen in your subconscious. Pretty sure I dreamt about LeBron. And I couldn't figure what was nagging at me about it. And I should have been the one to think of this, but it was Sean Hyken, who's a colleague and national NBA writer, who pointed out that this is LeBron not saying how great Steph is. I mean, that's what he's saying, but he's really saying, look how difficult our road is. Look how legitimate our win is going to be. Look how daunting, if we happen to lose, and why the narrative shouldn't turn against us, the path is. And the point that Sean made is so true. If the Lakers had gotten the sixth seed like they should have and were playing the Nuggets, you don't think we would have in some alternate universe, in some bizarro alternate, we are in the weirdest timeline. So in some like less bizarre universe where the Lakers are the sixth seed, he's saying that Jokic is the MVP. What it really comes down to and why this is such a brilliant, brilliant stroke of genius and success require even more luck than the smarts and the drive of Adam Silver, is that Warriors-Lakers not going to decide an NBA championship. And frankly, if you're the Jazz or the Suns, does it suck if you have to play one of those two teams, if both those matchups happen for both teams? Of course. But you want to win an NBA championship, you have to win 16 games. And the hope that someone else is going to take out the big dog is probably not a recipe for long-term success. You got to go through them eventually. I think the Lakers are actually really susceptible. I think the Lakers have expectations that'll be difficult to meet. I think the Warriors have no expectations that makes them less difficult to meet. Warriors make the second round. It's a massive Steph Curry celebration parade, emotionally. Lakers don't make the conference finals. It's a massive failure, regardless of what happens in the play-in. But Silver's genius and the excitement of these playoffs, and we'll get into the chaos possibilities, the competitive possibilities, about 30 minutes from now. Because, of course, we got to make time for UFOs. Thank you, 60 Minutes. But what's going to be awesome is that Warriors-Lakers from one game is going to feel like all the rivalry, all the time these guys have played each other in the postseason, LeBron and Steph, the historical greatness, the vast differences in their games, the way in which, as LeBron said, both these dudes have been written off. Steph coming into this year and LeBron coming into last year. Remember, LeBron's first year in L.A. got hurt, missed a bunch of games, Lakers missed the playoffs, and the notion here in Los Angeles and beyond was, oh, age is finally catching up to LeBron. This is going to be one of those showdowns we're going to look back at, and we're going to say, whatever it means for this postseason, that was a hell of a lot of fun. We never got LeBron Kobe in the playoffs, right? We never did. And I know we've gotten Steph LeBron, but this feels a lot more like a one-on-one, especially with AD kind of banged up. This feels like a one-game, one-on-one, Steph versus LeBron. That's not what it's going to be. Lakers have the number one defense in the NBA. Warriors have the number five defense. Draymond Green has started to find his, what did he call it? Bleeping dog, right? On TV, by the way. It's a terrible feeling when you're interviewing somebody. You just try to not react. Not react. All right, 855-212-4CBS. I like the Warriors. I definitely like the Warriors getting 6.5. Man, it's going to be so much fun. All right, I want to, 60 Minutes yesterday did amazing show. Amazing show, not just because it's CBS. They spent a bunch of time with Rafa Nadal, and it was just an insight into these guys like LeBron James, these guys like Mike Trout, just the unique approach greats have, different approaches. And then they got into UFOs, and it scared the holy crap out of me. I'm sort of shifting away from my underwater civilization theory and just worried that there's going to be an alien attack in like 50 years. I'm not lying to you. And I can say that because it was on 60 Minutes, so now it's gone mainstream. So we'll talk a little bit of that, and in a more serious note, the most visceral and moving Hall of Fame ceremony, NBA Hall of Fame induction ceremony I've ever seen. We'll do both those things next year on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
Welcome back into the show. Happy Monday. Can I share an uncomfortable truth with you? I've been wanting to say this because nobody will, and it feels wrong. Kobe's passing, which I have found overwhelmingly emotional in a way I didn't expect, right? Some guys in the NBA I've covered and I know and I have some interactions with professionally. Kobe's not one of those guys. I mean, I've asked him questions, but I covered the Eastern Conference, not the Western Conference, for a big chunk of his career. And I was pretty critical. I mean, critical is wrong, but I wasn't as in awe of Kobe as maybe some of my LA colleagues when I relocated to LA. And so I had this perspective that I thought would be, you know, years ago, one of the defining conversations around Kobe Bryant that nobody will have because it's hard talking about someone who's passed. But what I loved in part about yesterday's enshrinement at the Hall of Fame, which, by the way, was the best Hall of Fame enshrinement I've ever seen. With all respect to the Jordan anger thing, this was magic. KG was so classy and so great. Tim Duncan, and he said it, but it's true. I've been around that organization over the years. I've never heard Tim Duncan say that many words. And he's just a shy guy. He finds it painful to communicate. Also, cool haircut. Can I pull that off? Hashtag no. And his candor and emotion and how he talked about Pop. And both those guys, what haircuts? I mean, did someone drop Pop on the island with Tom Hanks in the volleyball? Is he eating mangoes to survive? Is that why the Spurs are barely a good basketball team? But KG's thing was great. Duncan's thing was great. And obviously, Vanessa Bryant's speech on Kobe Bryant was remarkable. It was remarkable. But I think that the basketball question that's most interesting for me is Duncan and Kobe defined an era. And between them won, 10 NBA championships over, you know, sort of 20-ish years in the same conference. And for me, the question has always been, who's the better player? And I know players roll their eyes and hate this, even though deep down they care. They care. Well, we got to rank guys. Why do we got to keep score when a ball goes in a hoop? I don't know. We're human beings. That's the thing that always gets me. Why we got to rank guys? you play or played, and I write or talk about a sport where we literally came up with a ball that bounces, and we made up this thing where we put it through a circular shape, and we there's points, and now people are millionaires off that. People like me saying that, you know, can feed their children off that. Why do we rank guys? Because we're idiots. We're beautiful, mouth-breathing, competitive human beings. It matters. And for me, I think Duncan was the better player than Kobe Bryant. And I think it's by a thin margin, and I think it's separated by, you know, I don't know where you put those guys, right? Is it 6'7"? Is it 8'9"? It's really hard to do a top 12 or 10. You can't even do a top 10 list anymore. There's too many guys. There's an elite tier, an ultimate elite tier, and that tier, for me, grows every year. And the guy that's just outside the elite tier, and I hate to say this because he's a buddy and he was on the stage, but Isaiah Thomas, right? Wherever Isaiah Thomas is, everything before that's the elite tier. Hope he's not listening. He takes this up real personally. Although based on what he pulled in that golf game once, when he mind bleeped me, maybe it doesn't matter. Yeah, I'm name dropping. You can just drop the name. Like, I'm just straight, like, should I just name everyone I'm friends with that's famous? Andy Roddick, Donovan McNabb, Andrew Bogish. No, I know Andrew Bogish. I know Bogish. Don't even pretend I don't. And here's my quick thing. And at the risk of sounding like I'm disparaging the late, great Kobe Bryant, I'm not. I don't think the passing of someone should change the history of someone. I think their history matters. And I think they're both amazing. For me, and I thought of this when Duncan was speaking yesterday, he's humble. Kobe wasn't. That's okay. But Duncan's unique personality, his ability to be an introvert, to be secondary, even when he was the dominant guy, extended that Spurs dynasty longer than the Lakers got extended, because Kobe had to be the alpha even when he wasn't good enough to carry a team. And Duncan was able and willing to transition to Tony Parker and transition to Kawhi Leonard and be an impact player for 20 minutes a game. Such unique careers, unique men, and remarkable speeches. I thought it was beautiful. I was in a great mood. And then I made the mistake of watching 60 Minutes. I actually watched it in clips on Paramount Plus. And first I watched the Rafa Nadal thing because I'm interested in athletes sort of behind the scenes and the way in which he practices and how aggressive he is and how he has created on his island of Mallorca like a normal life. And I'm like, oh, this is great. Like normalcy. I always say normalcy, make up the word. Normalcy. And then they just went like straight UFOs. Like, oh, by the way, up next, UFOs are real and we're screwed. And to watch the pilots, I've already read all this stuff, but to watch the pilots, like Top Gun trained, top level, rational pilots, talk on camera, in some cases for the first time, describe what they saw. Like Mike Freeman, his theory, it's humans from the future who are basically doing historical recording, which would be great because it's not a threat, and that means we made it far enough that we can time travel, right? We haven't screwed up the timeline, right? I don't think that's it. Part of me wants to still believe that it's this underwater civilization that we can't see because it's so deep underneath water, right? It's like, I just think the aliens are going to attack. I really do. I think they're coming. Maybe they're going to come in peace, but I think it's 20 to 70 years. Like, Andrew Bogish is going to be sitting on his chair, right? Retired, his grandkids all around him, you know, fake teeth. When I was younger, that writer guy said the aliens were there, but they're not real. And then they're just going to land in his front yard along with 1,000 others. Andrew Bogish, have you seen the 60 Minutes? It's 60 Minutes. It's not, you know, popculture.net, right? Can't even get a .com. It's 60 Minutes. Did you watch it?
I did not. My friend texted me last night and woke me for a minute from my deep, deep slumber on a Sunday night. So then
put
I woke
phone
up
on.
This
Do
morning.
Not disturb.
Yeah. And then I woke up this morning not wanting my Monday to start off in a bad way. So I have not watched it yet.
I woke you up.
For like a minute, yeah.
Oh, I bet you were.
Just
I
enough to
were,
be like, I bet, Bill, aliens. And then I went to sleep.
I bet you were super pissed off. Is that why you've made eye contact?
I wasn't
on awake Skype?
Long enough to be that angry, but it was. I did wake up to the buzz.
They're gonna look, there's the thing that blew my mind is when they asked. And the fighter pilots wouldn't say extraterrestrial. They're just, it's out there and the technology is one of these things, and this is recorded, right? They have it on this fancy new radar they put on a ship. One of these things, a fighter pilot did a corkscrew down toward the ocean where this tic-tac looking thing was hanging out, burrowing in the water. and the thing mirrored it, came up at the exact same but inverted angle. So it was aware of their presence, and then it got nose to nose, and then it was gone, and it appeared 60 miles away in 1 second. This is recorded. So this is what these guys are saying is, we, you know, maybe it's China, but if so, we all need to learn to speak Mandarin. They didn't say that, but I'm like, it's just, or if it's Russian, better learn to speak Russian. I don't know how to speak Deutschenschlagen. I think that's actually fake German. But the point is, this is these are rational people. And they asked one of these guys, how often do you see it off the East Coast? Not far from where you're sitting. Every day. It's common. Every day. These tic-tac, alien, future human, underwater probe things. It's real.
It's too common. Too common for aliens. You had me up until every day. And every day, they're not that lazy. They're not that inquisitive. If they were here every day, they'd be coming for us. They'd be in charge by now. So maybe it's not aliens.
Or maybe they're on their way, and it takes a minute to get here. And these little craft can, I don't know, do light speed because you don't. It's AI, and you don't have to worry about biological, you know, entities disintegrating that travel. And they're sending the info back. And when they get here in 70 years, they'll know English, and they'll be like, let's party. Or we're going to take your water, and we're going to start with Bogus because he didn't believe that we were God. I don't know.
No.
I don't know.
I believe. I just want the safest, less invasive way. Like, if these are really just, like, humans coming back in time to do some research, I'll take that. I'll take your underwater alien life forms, too. But I just, like, evil taking us over the planet, aliens, is not what I want to think about right now.
I understand. I'm just going to say this. When the folks who are native to this continent were standing on first saw the ships from Europe arriving, probably felt like aliens, and it didn't go great. So I'm just gonna put it out there. Tom, I'm like, how do we? I know our boss Mark Chernoff will text me like, enough alien talk. But it's 60 minutes.
Good text.
How is no one talking about this?
I know. That's a crazy part. And the frequency too. You hit it, like the everyday thing. That's the level that just freaks me out, because it's. This is happening every day. It's of somehow avoiding mass detection. They're not really being captured. They're not failing. We're not discovering these things, like wreckages of these things anywhere. They're just basically living among us every single day. I don't even know what to make of that.
I don't either. I mean, the best case scenario is the Aquaman theory, you know, or the intelligent fish theory or whatever's down there.
I mean, I think future people is a really kind of optimistic thing once you get over just the terror of time travel. Like, if we're actually, first of all, it means we made it, presumably, and then if we actually have the technology to be monitoring ourselves in the past, that sounds really cool. So I would like for that to be it, but that seems a little too easy.
Yeah, that's optimistic. Like humanity is going to use time travel just to, like, check stuff out and not just try to warp history to their own ends. I don't know.
Maybe somehow try to gently influence us in a better direction somehow using their flying tic-tacs.
I can't wait till LeBron and Brady both retire like 10 years from now and they somehow do it on the same day, and then just a tic-tac comes down and picks them both up and they're like, we were aliens the whole time, or we're from the future, deuces. And they're just
it's
gone.
It's like the end of Space Jam in reverse, though. LeBron plays his last game and then the tic-tac comes into the arena and he just gets in and he's gone like Frodo. Just
America, I wish you could see Andrew Bogus. It looks like he's having a panic attack right now on the skyscraper.
Yeah, I stopped listening.
Don't stop. This is real. This is what the thing I don't understand.
That's the problem, Bill.
It's
real. The problem. It's probably real. Hence my frustration and my fear. It's probably real. We're probably taken over by a whole army of LeBron soon. Or Tom Brady's even worse. I get it. It's coming.
Yeah, no gluten for the human race once they get here. Gluten's outlawed. Gluten is outlawed forever. I mean, look, it's going to be what it's going to be, right? I mean, it's underwater. I still think there's a slight chance that some idiot created AI somewhere, and it's just like it's out there just trying to figure out what it wants to do.
Yeah, I mean, it would have made a move by now, right? I mean,
I would say that, I mean, if you're AI, you have all the patience in the world. What do you...
Guess.
It's not like, you know, it's not you're going to, you know, like it could take 300 years and just be like, let's evaluate and hang out. I don't know. It's
waiting for the moment of
crashed.
Maximum vulnerability. Yeah.
Or maybe it's just trying to decide like, yeah, these humans are. Maybe it's listening to this right now. Maybe it's one of the, hey, we AI, if you're listening, we got basketball, we got NFL, you know, we got Bogus, everything. We're worth keeping. All right. This is my last show.
Catalog.
Between the Pentagon and the bosses, it was awesome working with you guys. It really, Did you guys watch the Hall of Fame speeches?
Yeah.
Not in the moment. Not live, no. After the fact.
I'm used to there being one or two. They were all, by the way, not just, I mean, I mentioned the big names, but they were all. I looked over in one of the random speeches, and my wife was crying. Are you okay? It was just super moving. The whole thing was, what an incredible, incredible day for the NBA.
It was intense.
Weekend.
It was intense. I mean, it was a beautiful experience, but it was intense. It was a great class. And then, yeah, the Kobe thing has this weird, like, timelessness now where it's, like, still hard to wrap your head around. It still feels fresh. And we're all going through it together in a very – I mean, you talked about it in the last segment. We're all going through it together in a really weird way, too. Yeah, so yeah. Part of the healing process, but it was a beautiful ceremony. It was beautiful to see everybody together, for sure.
It was really cool. Andrew Bogish, the steward of our fears of the – of the UAPs, the flying Tic Tacs, the impending alien arrival. I shouldn't say invasion, right? Because it could be a very friendly, what's up? How's it going? We love Rick and Morty. That's so funny. would you like to, as we await the fate from our, you know, from whatever's going on with these UAPs, would you like to do an update? While we have time.
Yeah, I'll just read all these names and numbers as if they matter, which they don't really. Hornets at Pacers, Wizards at Celtics. That's the play-in field for the East tomorrow night. The Washington-Boston winner gets the Nets in round one. The loser plays the Charlotte Indy winner for the 8th seed and a first-round date with the Sixers. Brooklyn claimed that 2 seed yesterday with a 123-109 win over Cleveland. The Knicks claiming home court in round one with the Hawks with a 96-82 home win over the Celtics. Out west, the Jazz finally clinched number one overall with a 121-99 rout of the Kings. The Nuggets send up third, the Clippers fourth, the Blazers sixth, which means the Lakers stuck at number seven despite a 110-98 win in New Orleans. So LA hosts Golden State Wednesday night. The winner deals with the Suns. The loser plays the Spurs-Grizzlies winner for number eight. And Utah. This is officially Marv Albert's final NBA postseason. The legend formally announced his retirement this morning. His final assignment is the Eastern Conference Final. Over 55 years behind the mic, Albert has called 25 NBA All-Star games and 13 finals. The San Diego Padres still playing without Fernando Tatis Jr., Will Myers, Eric Hosmer, and two others because of COVID. They're 5-1 since Tatis Jr. first tested positive, with a lot of replacements chipping in. Here's manager Jace Tingler.
I think it's our environment, you know, in the clubhouse, just how welcoming we are with, you know, our guys. I think our leadership team, our veteran players do a tremendous job of bringing people
in. Padres kept rolling last night, a 5-3 win over the Cardinals. Veteran defensive end Ryan Kerrigan is signing with the Eagles after 10 years in Washington. Bears head coach Matt Nagy said yesterday Andy Dalton will get QB1 reps during OTAs next week. And the Giants have signed receiver turned tight end Kelvin Benjamin and former Eagles running back Corey Clement. Three more game ones on ice yesterday. The first two went to overtime. The third one almost did.
Great point shot blocked by McDonough. Up ice. Here's a breakaway. Brandon Point alone. Backhand shot. Score! Brandon Point! Brandon Point! 5-4 Lightning with 1:14 left to go!
Dave Mishkin on Lightning Radio. Braden Point scoring with 74 seconds left in regulation for a 5-4 win in Florida. That came after Minnesota's 1-0 OT win in Vegas and the Islanders' 4-3 OT win in Pittsburgh. Serena Williams beat a 17-year-old qualifier in Parma, Italy today for her first win since the Aussie Open quarterfinal. Serena hadn't played since losing in the semis down under until last week in Rome, where she dropped her first match. She is prepping for the French Open, which begins in 2 weeks. MLS last night, Seattle a 2-0 home win over LAFC, 1-0 finals for Orlando City at DC United, and New England over Columbus, and K.H. Lee won the Byron Nelson for his first career PGA Tour victory. Bill, back to you. Hopefully I see you in an hour.
Thank you, Andrew Bogish. And if the Tic Tac things are listening and you're looking for someone to go on a little ride, a little like probing, Andrew would love to just experience your technology. You can find him in Long Island, probably just like zap onto him from his voice. I got to unveil my NBA ballot. Man, that was an excruciating series of decisions. But first, let's get into these NBA playoff matchups, because there is so much potential chaos, so many series that are going to be competitive. It could be a pretty thrilling NBA postseason, and we'll try to dive into that here next on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
What up, Bill Ryder with you. Thanks for hanging. Happy Monday. Man. By the way, quick aside before we get into some NBA talk. How does the National Football League, and credit Peter King, as we tend to, not realize that the new format they've created with the buys extended further is going to just destroy fantasy football? Here's how it's going to work. There's, I think, five teams, maybe six, who have buys in what is traditionally the first week of the NFL fantasy playoffs. So if I think it's the Colts, the Eagles, the Jags, there's a few others. Be careful drafting guys from those teams. I mean, come on, guys. It's very rare the NBA is better run over a weekend than the NFL. Not because the NBA is not well run, just because the NFL is the gold standard. But what a weekend for the National Basketball Association. I was telling Thomas, producer underscore Tom, that I can't remember ever, outside of work obligations, having multiple screens because I was utterly held, my attention was wrapped around regular season final weekend NBA games. I mean, what a weekend. And it's not an anomaly. It's not a one-off. Because every series, outside of, I think, who Philly plays and who Brooklyn plays, every other series has the makings of an upset. Every series. I'm going to go through them with you. And we don't know if it'll be Lakers or Warriors who win that game. But let's say the Lakers win the game and then the Warriors beat Memphis or the Spurs. I think that's again, there could be some chaos. Loser of Lakers, Warriors could certainly lose one game. It happens. But if you're Utah, and if you're Utah, who do you want? I mean, you want the Warriors. I mean, you do. The Lakers can beat either of those teams. They just can't. So that's an upset, a possible 1-8 or 1-7. Phoenix could lose to the Lakers or the Warriors. 100%. And Phoenix will get one of those two teams, right? It also makes the one seed really valuable, at least this time around. Clippers-Dallas. Clippers are a 4, Dallas is a 5. The Clippers are going to be heavy favorites. They've played extraordinarily well. Their defense has become markedly improved. Paul George, who's on my all-NBA ballot, we'll get into that here in about 15 or 20 minutes, has looked great. When Kawhi has played, he's played at times at an MVP level. But I've seen this story before. We know that Dallas is good enough to shock some teams, to be competitive. That is not a given that the Clippers are going to advance. Portland-Denver is a great series. And I'm not hating on the Nuggets. Michael Porter Jr. and the way that he has stepped in offensively. And by the way, we're going to do some braggadocio later. I didn't pull this clip. We pulled some of the stuff that we called on the show. I was one of, not that it was an overwhelmingly singular view, but this idea that Denver was done the moment Jamal Murray went down was just espoused by people who don't follow the NBA. Because the notion was, and I heard it on this network and other networks, it happens, the notion was, well, I mean, Jamal Murray scored all those points in the bubble. They can't get by without the offense. For whatever reason, I don't know if he's in the doghouse or Mike Malone had some brilliant plan. Michael Porter Jr., former Mizzou player, would have been a top two pick, fell to the mid part of the first round when he came out, hasn't been able to get minutes. He hasn't been able to get minutes. And Murray going down gave Michael Porter Jr. the chance to play all the time, and he just had, in terms of effective field goal percentage, the second most efficient season in NBA history behind Wilt Chamberlain. I mean, think about that. And yet, MPJ's not really tested in a postseason sense, and I think Portland, I mean, we've seen this before. If Portland doesn't have to play the Warriors, they can win playoff series after playoff series. That's a possible upset. The Miami Heat are not the team you want to play. I think the biggest drop, the most outside of Lakers going to the play-in, the most significant battle in the NBA playoff picture this year was for the 3 seed in the Eastern Conference. And with all respect to playing some of these other teams in the Eastern Conference, you have an easy road if you're Brooklyn now. You just do. And I don't want Brooklyn to win because I've said I don't think that they will. But they're going to play one of the play-in teams, right? And as the two seed, they're going to play the winner of Boston, Washington. And in theory, the Wizards are the kind of team that could maybe shock them a little bit, but I just don't buy it. As well as the Wizards have played, and they have played great basketball, I don't buy it. And Boston's just been too inconsistent. And that means that Brooklyn, as the two seed, is going to have home court advantage over Milwaukee if Milwaukee gets there. Because I'm a lot more worried about the Heat. If I am Philly, Milwaukee, or Brooklyn, I know matchups matter, but I'm a lot more worried about the Miami Heat than I am the Knicks or the Hawks. I just am. Look, I think Trae Young is an otherworldly talent, and what the Hawks have become under Nate McMillan is incredible. They were already a top 10 offense. They've become basically a middle of the pack defense from basically the worst defense in the NBA, which makes them formidable. And the Knicks defense is excruciating to go up against, and Julius Randle's been awesome. And there's just this level of belief in New York, right? A grittiness combined with confidence. And Derrick Rose, I thought about Derrick Rose for Sixth Man of the Year, which felt kind of weird, right? But there's something special brewing there. But the Miami Heat made the finals last year. They feel underappreciated and disrespected. Bam is a defensive marvel. Jimmy Butler is a defensive marvel and just a marvel. Tyler Hero started to play better. Eric Spoelstra is one of the best coaches in the NBA and in the postseason. I think Milwaukee's going to win that series. And I actually think, again, I'm down on Brooklyn. And I watched the last few games and I'm aware that I could absolutely be wrong and Howard Beck could be wrong and a lot of us could be wrong. I just don't think it's going to work. Despite all the firepower, despite the fact that James Harden, when he played, which wasn't as much as you know you would have liked, was one of the best three or four players in the NBA, despite the fact that Kyrie Irving just had a 50-40-90 season, only nine people have done that. All of them are Hall of Famers other than Malcolm Brogdon. Brogdon's like the one guy who's just like, I'm here too! 50% or better from the field, 40% or better from three, 90% or better from the free throw line. Now, Kyrie didn't play every day. That is, right? It's like hitting 400 if you have the absolute minimum number of at-bats to qualify. Does it count? Yes. Is there an asterisk? I guess that's up to you. I still think it's an amazing accomplishment. And then Kevin Durant's the best of those three guys. I think Milwaukee's the better team. For me, I think it's... The thing is, Philly is the best team in the Eastern Conference, but, like, hard pause here. Doc Rivers has not been a successful coach in the playoffs relative to his opportunities, the talent, and the leads that his teams have built. That is a fact. That doesn't mean it carries over, but it may mean that. We're going to see. And I just worry about the offensive firepower of that Philly team. Daryl Morey, and we don't actually vote for executive of the year. That's executives, but we're also doing ballots at CBSSports.com just to sort of put out some content, right? Daryl Morey would be my vote over Sean Marks and some of the other folks that are out there. But, and adding three-point shooting, bringing in guys who can space the floor, but that's the same thing that Milwaukee's had in the past, right? We need guys to hit threes, but those guys aren't stars. That doesn't always translate. It often doesn't translate to success. I'm a little Philly skeptical. I'm skeptical of every team, really, in the Eastern Conference. I mean, all of them. And then Knicks-Atlanta is going to be, and I'm probably going to go to New York City just to be able to be around that series and the Nets series for CBS Sports HQ and do the show from New York. I don't know who's going to win that series. I'm probably going to take Atlanta, but neither surprised me. And I'd like to do the cop-out and say it'll be in seven games. But whenever you see NBA writers do seven games, it's code for I don't know, which is okay. You don't have to always have the answer. I think what's really interesting is the startlingly different styles. I mean, Atlanta's going to shoot a ton of threes. Can Trae Young be his marvelous self and create space for himself with that stifling Knicks defense? Is that Atlanta offense better than that Knicks defense? Knicks defense is amazing. It's not the best defense in the NBA. But there's a toughness that goes with it, right? Atlanta can be a little soft. Let's be honest, they can be soft. Now, under McMillan, it's been better. Trae Young hasn't really experienced any kind of real NBA games that matter, but neither have most of the guys on the Knicks outside of Derrick Rose. That's a hell of a series. I think it's Atlanta, But I know most people in New York City think it's obviously the Knicks. And I think it's fascinating how much people in New York are dismissing Atlanta. Like, that. Oh, that series already happened. How are we going to do in the next round? Man, it's going to be a great NBA playoffs. You could have three upsets or four upsets. You have all these teams, the Clippers, the Nets, Philly, Milwaukee, with histories of choking, of not being able to do it. Can't wait. All right, this NBA ballot, I gotta unveil it to you. It's official. I'll put the votes in later. It's excruciating. It's your last chance to help me do the right thing. You can be a part of this next on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
Bill Ryder with you, coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can. So, what's the old expression? Set an NBA, official NBA awards ballot free, and if it loves you, it'll come back to you. It has. I love you too, NBA. Used to vote for this thing all the time. Then it went away. Sometimes being on the radio and saying the exact same thing on the radio that you write comes off in a little more aggressive way to the people you cover. It's an honor. I love it. I get into filling for Jim Rome on a somewhat regular basis when Jim is off. And I think I've said this, but every time that I say something about the NBA tongue in cheek, the example that comes to mind is I believe that David Stern pulled a cold envelope out of the pile. I believe that they set Patrick Ewing on a course in New York City. I also think it's amazing that the Cavs happened to win. I know they were supposed to, but win the lottery when LeBron James was coming out of Akron. And I said that on Rome once, and I got a note from a pretty high-level NBA person at the home office, an NBA executive. Hey, I haven't heard from this guy in like 4 years. Sound great on Rome. Sound great. Congratulations. That's really great for your career. This is not what happened. So, you know, coincidental, the ballot went away when I got the radio show. I don't know. But it's back, baby. And be careful what you ask for, because it was a really tough year. So I'm going to put this in the next couple hours. It's due today. They've also sent me like 11 reminders. I would like to think it's automated to all the voters, but it feels Bill Ryder specific. Hey, Ryder, you got to vote. You got to vote, bro. Got to vote. I know. It's really tough. So I'm going to go over this ballot. I'm going to go over some of the really difficult things. And then if you hear something that you think is wrong, because I have reached out to so many NBA sources, scouts, people that work in front offices, colleagues. I'm going to let Tom just sort of jump in here. Tom, whenever you want to jump in, give your take. And if you hear something, 855-212-4CBS and Twitter, SportsWriter, Sports, R-E-I-T-E-R. This matters. It's important. I always strive to tell you what's real, what I actually think is true, regardless of whether it sounds smart or stupid. But this has millions of dollars on the line. I think I mentioned that, and it's not just him, but there are bonuses tied. The CBA evaluates how much guys can make, what level of contract they can make in extensions and next deals based on qualifications that have to do with this voting. One example, Donovan Mitchell making an all-NBA team this time around is worth, I think, $24, $26 million in his next deal to him. $26 million. And that's one of the hardest parts of this. There's six slots for all-NBA guards, and there's 9 or 10 or 11 guys who deserve to be on the list. That's a math problem. Where do you put Embiid at a different position, which the NBA lets you do? There will be voters who will put Embiid at forward, even though he's a center. But if you don't put him at center, he drops down because this guy named Nikola Jokic is going to be the MVP. You can't vote Jokic number one as the MVP and then put Embiid over him on your own NBA team at center. And then there's Harden versus Kyrie for one of these few spots on the All-NBA list and, of course, MVP. So let's get into it. This is my actual ballot. It could change. The first MVP is easy. It's Jokic. And by the way, had Embiid played all the games, had the Warriors finished in the top three, right? Had LeBron not gotten hurt, I still think there's a strong case for Jokic. He's been amazing. But his durability is a big part of it. I've got Jokic 1. I've got Embiid 2. I've got Giannis 3. Steph is 4. And I actually woke up today thinking about, am I supposed to put Steph to 2? But I'm not. No, the answer is no. He's been amazing, by the way. I've got Chris Paul 5, which leaves off Kawhi, right? Leaves off Damian Lillard. Leaves off all the Warriors guys. There's not a single player from the one seed in the Western Conference. But that's it's a unique team for me. They have an MVP of offense who's injured, and they have an MVP of defense. And the Chris Paul thing, this will be the second time in my career I've put him on the ballot. And again, I don't have to like you to vote for you. Like, I can separate my feelings for someone from my professional responsibilities. I mean, one of the reasons Chris Paul doesn't like me is I'm honest about Chris Paul. I'm honest that he's a marvelous player, and I'm honest that he's an absolute phony who destroyed his teams from the inside and now has found, like Jimmy Butler, the right fit for his unique personality. Here's some breaking news. You can be a good person at home. You can be a bad person at work. You can be a bad person at work and have tons of success. Human beings are complicated. Anything there, Tom, that you would quibble with, that you would adjust? I sent this, by the way, I sent this ballot to basically, I probably shouldn't say this, but I will. I sent it to two GMs that I trust. I sent it to a scout that I trust. I sent it to a boss that I trust at CBS Sports, like for their candor and their NBA assessment skills. And I sent it to another NBA adjacent guy that I trust. And all of them wrote back, the names are right, but I do the orders differently. And then gave me, I mean, it's amazing how hard this stuff is.
I'm actually surprised. I thought you were going to get a lot of basically confirmations, because I don't really have a gripe. I'd love to say I did. I think Doncic is a really close call.
Doncic is, yeah,
at five.
Yep.
That's the only one maybe I would switch. But I've been with you on the CP3 is the most valuable part of this Phoenix revolution that they've had. He's changed that franchise by stepping in that locker room. So I that's what value is. And then statistical value, I mean, VORP, value over replacement player. His VORP, Chris Paul, this season is 11th in the league, tied with Embiid. So statistically, he's tremendously valuable also, while having this clear lift on the whole organization. I think he deserves to be on that ballot. I would do the same five as you. I think Kawhi fell off at the end of the year. I would say that Doncic is next above Kawhi and LeBron if there was going to be somebody else instead of CP3 in the five spot.
Doncic is interesting because I have him, we'll get to this, but I have him above Lillard on my All-NBA rankings, and above if I had a 10 person MVP ballot, I would have Doncic just ahead of Lillard. But I had people try to convince me to move Doncic down. But it's not in front of me, but I'm pretty sure he's 26 or it's like 26 or 27, 8 and 9. I mean, he's just so good.
And that team started off being a mess. Yeah, I mean, we can get to the Doncic.
Turn him around.
We all took for granted how easily he made it look leading that team to the position that they're in now.
The VORP stat's a great stat for Chris Paul because it puts a number to what I've seen, right? He has made DeAndre Ayton markedly better. He has freed up Devin Booker to not have to be double-teamed constantly. And even at his age, right, Chris Paul is pretty old for a point guard. He's still really good defensively, and that doesn't always track in the stats. Like, his impact on winning is legit. So Jokic just won, Embiid, Giannis, Steph, and Chris Paul. It's an amazing year for the NBA. Rookie of the Year was pretty easy. LaMelo Ball, Anthony Edwards, and then Tyrese Halliburton are 1, 2, 3. Defensive Player of the Year I found really hard. Really hard. Because very quietly, no one's paying attention. Jimmy Butler's been amazing. He's not on my top three. Clint Capella's been amazing. He's not on my top three. Gobert, I think, will be almost certainly the universal number one. I went Ben Simmons 2, and I went Draymond Green 3. And this is a place that I really leaned on sources, because I watch a lot of NBA games, but you have to, at least I have to, make myself watch guys playing defense, right? Your eye naturally follows the ball. It doesn't follow the defender. It's like, and I've said this before about Klay Thompson and certainly Draymond and Simmons too. It's like going to an NFL game and deciding I'm going to watch the center for an entire series, or I'm going to watch this free safety for an entire series. You have to make yourself do it. And I got to tell you, Tom, I wanted to vote for Simmons because he's a marvel defensively. I just think Gobert, in some ways, I think he is the best defensive player in the NBA. I also think he's the MVP of Utah's defense and, you know, at least half the reason they are where they are.
Yeah, I was just about to say, Gobert's the best defensive player in the NBA. Whether or not he should win it specifically for this season, he's in the middle of a reign as the best defensive player. So I'd probably go that way, but I don't think you could go wrong with Simmons. And, you know, it's crazy. Statistically, Nerlens Noel had an amazing season. You're not going to give it to somebody off the bench, but what an amazing defensive season he had.
Yeah.
Completely unheralded for the Knicks. A huge part of what they did But Draymond's a good pick. You know, Giannis could have been an interesting pick, but how many awards are we really going to throw at that guy? I have no problem at all with Ben Simmons.
Most improved player, to me, is no-brainer. One and two are no-brainers. It is, for me, Julius Randle. He's going to win. I have Michael Porter Jr., too, and Mr. Bridges at three. And MPJ, I mean, if MPJ had played the entire season massive minutes, like let's say that Jamal Murray had been injured early, like the very, it might have been closer. I did not do all 10 MVP, right? There's five votes. There's five spots. I did five. So I don't know, but I bet Randle would have, I mean, he would have been in my top 10 if I had had to vote for 10 slots. You know, probably a 8-9 range. I mean, he's that important to what they do. What's going to be really interesting, because this happens with most improved players, is sometimes they regress, right? Sometimes they're most improved because what you see is a one-season anomaly. I'm really curious what happens to Randle going forward. Coach of the Year was brutal. Because you've got Tibbs, right? I mean, and Tom, I'm going to do a little braggadocio Monday in a little bit, stuff I got right, but I was so wrong on the Knicks. I was a moron on the New York. I swung and missed in a bit. I thought they'd be a really cute 11 seed, with Knicks fans saying we're almost there, and they won 31 games. They're obviously a competitor. That is coaching. That is culture. Monty Williams is the steward of this Phoenix team, and there's a lot of other names. Like, I think I'm going to get some grief for this. Here's what I did. I went Tibbs 1, and it was really torturous between him and Monty Williams. And some of that is, right, in the margins, when it's a matter of degrees, whether this is the right approach or not to put together your NBA ballot. Bill Ryder with you here on Ryder Than You on CBS Sports Radio. I have Monty Williams having one of the five most valuable players coming in, and I have Tom Thibodeau not having that. Right. And I understand that Phoenix finished 2 and the Knicks finished, what, 5? 4. And that the Western Conference is a more difficult conference. I get it. I just think the degree of difficulty and the jump the Knicks made is legit. And then at 3, I didn't go Quinn Snyder. You know, I didn't go Doc Rivers. I didn't go a lot of names. I went Nate McMillan, which may not go over well. But I really like that Atlanta team. It's the last organization I went to be around before the pandemic last year, right? So I talked to everybody that was there, and I believe they're going to have upside. And as we'll play later in the show, Tom, I did call that they would be a top six team. And so I followed them really closely. And just the difference when Nate took over has been remarkable. But I'll be curious if anyone else has them on the ballot. Like I think I asked Sam Amick or Howard Beck when they were on the show, maybe on Rome, maybe on this show, would you do it? And they sort of said, he took that team from a team that was going to miss the playoffs or at least be a bad playing team. And now they're in the 4-5 series.
Yeah, he's done an amazing job. All three of those guys deserve shout outs. There's no doubt about it. And I think Thibodeau getting the Knicks to the 4 position is kind of the key for him probably being the right choice here. I still think it's Quinn Snyder. I think it's easy to overlook what he has built, but the fact that they locked up the 1 seed in the West is just incredible, and they almost wire-to-wired this thing. They were pretty much the best team in the NBA the whole time. They're incredibly consistent, and they play an amazing team brand of basketball. They're not relying on a superstar or isolation player or anything like that. So I've been incredibly impressed with what he's built there. Yes, they need to back it up with a big playoff run. But if I had a vote, I think I would go with him. But, I mean, I can't argue that hard against any of the three guys you named.
It's a good one. I know Quinn from back in the Missouri days, right? When I was at the Kansas City Star and he was at Mizzou, he used to randomly call me when he was, like, out of the business. I don't know him that well.
Crazy journey.
I mean, it's tough. It's a tough one. And I don't have a good counter. You know, it's not like he's got LeBron James on his team, right? Well, that's the thing. All of these guys are lacking a veteran superstar other than Monty Williams. Chris Paul coming in is obviously a huge addition. Thibodeau, to me, I mean, Julius Randle and all of his accolades, right? Chris Bosh is going to be in the Hall of Fame next year. I mean, people are calling this guy a Hall of Famer, better than Hall of Famers. And Thibodeau's a part of that, right? Like, Thibodeau's a guy who brought out the best in him. It's really brutal.
And he had much to turn around the toxicity. Oh, of the franchise when
terrible culture
in the door. Yeah.
Terrible culture.
Terrible.
It just tells you how bad the Timberwolves are. All right, all NBA. This is where it gets brutal. Two guards, two forwards, and a center. That's the way it works. I wish they did it the way that they do all-star voting, where it's front court and back court. But here's what it is. I got Curry and Doncic as my one and two and my guards. So here's the problem that I have. Some voters have released ballots early, and I looked at it. I don't want to look at very many. But there are guys that are putting Embiid as a forward in order to get him higher in some of the accolades. And maybe it's just me. I'm put out by this, and these are like friends and colleagues. But there are people who are putting Embiid at one position on their all-NBA team and a different position on their all-defensive team to, like, get the names that they want. And I was texting a bunch of sources, and one of them wrote back and said, NBA allows it, so you can put Embiid a forward, but since he's never played a single minute at that position, it's kind of weird. And that was it for me. I can't do it. So Embiid's going to be all-NBA second team, not because I think he's a second team all-NBA guy, but because that's the structure that's been put in front of us. Curry, Doncic, Giannis, and Kawhi, and Jokic are my all-NBA one. Because I'm not going to put Embiid at forward. Even though I think Embiid is the second most important player in the NBA this year. I've got him two on my ballot. All right, that's the problem with how the positions work. All-NBA two, I've got... Actually, I'm probably going to have to move... See, it's interesting, right? Because I've got Chris Paul on my second All-NBA team, even though I've got him ahead of Doncic on my ballot, which is the only place where I would ever do that, because I think his value extends beyond playing the point guard position. I think it's like Jimmy Butler. I've got Lillard, this is All-NBA second team, Jimmy Butler and Julius Randle and Embiid. I think Butler and Randle have been unsung heroes doing yeoman's work for those teams. And then this is where it gets brutal, right? Because I got Paul George and LeBron, All-NBA third team. LeBron is tough. It's tough. Gobert is my center. He didn't play a lot of minutes, but LeBron he's certainly on my top 10 MVP ballot. And he plays 10 more games, and he probably gets a bunch of votes. For me, it's who do you put as the two guard spots? Because you've got, in no particular order, you've got Zach LaVine, you've got Trae Young, you've got Russell Westbrook, you've got Bradley Beal, you've got James Harden, and you've got Kyrie Irving. That's seven names. I can pick two. Oh, Donovan Mitchell. That's eight names, and you can pick two. By the way, CJ McCollum, like, not even in consideration. I could go around the league, right? I could go around the league. It's brutal. So of those eight names, Tom, who would you put? Then I'll give you mine.
Oh, man. I mean, right? That is
brutal.
Impossible. I don't even know how you do that, especially with, like, injury. Like, Harden is such a perfect example. Dude. What do we say about Harden? Harden stays healthy, and it's possible we're having a discussion about him being in the top three of your MVP ballot. And yeah. Now we're talking about not third-team All-NBA. It seems wrong. But then again, like, Bradley Beal just went down to the wire with Steph Curry for the scoring title. That seems
wrong. 30-some points a game.
Russell Westbrook averaged a triple-double again, so there's that. I mean, I'm finding it really hard to eliminate any of these people, and I'm not really sure where I'm supposed to turn to find a preference, so I don't even know that I can answer the question.
So I think Bradley Beal has been one of the most disrespected players in NBA history as it relates to some of the accolades that are out there. It's not a reason to vote for someone, but if Steph Curry sits the fourth quarter, right, or scores a few fewer points, or Beal goes off for 50 in a final game, which he's capable of, by the way. He could have won the scoring title. Average 30 points a game is not easy to do. So I got Beal on the list. I went, and then after I made my decision, Kyrie went 50-40-90, which I hold in a remarkably high esteem.
There you go.
To me,
too.
It came down to Harden and Kyrie. Those were like my, and in the end, I went Harden. And part of the reason, and everybody can make a choice not to come to work. I'm not making a moral judgment on Kyrie wanting to focus on Palestine and Israel. I'm not making a moral judgment on Kyrie needing family time. But this is an all-NBA team, right? It's you make your choices, and we don't judge you. But if you decide that something is more important than work, then you're not going, then your honors will come away from work, right? Not at work. It's his choice. I'm not judging it. In the end, Harden played when he could, and when he played, I thought he was better than Kyrie. And I thought there were times where he carried that Brooklyn team when there was just him and this sense of the wheels were going to come off. But it was, I mean, it's hard. Zach LaVine had a crazy year. Westbrook had a, I almost went, so for me it went in this order as the last guard spots: Harden, Kyrie, Westbrook. Man, brutal.
I think he made the right call. I think he made the right call, too, because I think what answers it is if you gave the Nets only two of their big three, who would they take? And they would take Harden and KD, and Kyrie would be left off.
I think so, too. Real quick, all defense, Simmons, Drew Holiday, Bam, Draymond, Gobert, Bridget, second team, Bridges, Smart, Giannis, Jimmy Butler, and Embiid. Again, Embiid, second team all defense, second team all NBA, second best player this year, right? Second best player this year in the association. Utterly and totally brutal. And you fill this stuff out. And every year I had these nightmares that I've forgotten someone. Like, I'm going to fill it out, and then the people, I'm going to get a note or wake up in a cold sweat. Like, you didn't want to put Steph on your ballot, right? The equivalent of that. Do you remember Jokic play this year? All right, I went super long. 855-212-4CBS. We'll do some braggadocio Monday next year on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
I love that rejoin. In part because there's no one on earth for whom it's not true. When they're right, they're right. But also, I haven't gotten it. So Andrew Bogish likes to send critiques of the show, which I appreciate, but they're often before the show. And I got one today, and one of the main points was, could you just one time be right? The show's called Writer Than You, just one time. Could you please be correct? And I wrote Bogish back and said, I got a surprise for you coming up. Because it turns out that this year, and I keep saying this, that I've been hammering this this belief that I thought that the Suns could be a top four team and that the Hawks could be a top six team, six being critical to miss the play-in. And Andrew Bogish, you'll be happy to know, producer Tom went and found some of the sound. So here is the first time of several. December 30th, I'm being told, last year, that the season began, 3 days before that or 2 days? I can't remember. Here is me. You're going to hear I'm pretty excited. It's either the coffee or the bold prediction. Me loving up on Atlanta.
It's time. It's on. It's real. That Atlanta team is going to be competitive for a top six spot. They are really fun and really good. Every move they've made doesn't just make them better this year, but builds for the years ahead. Trae Young is the real deal. He is legit.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Bogus, don't worry. We got another one. See, Bogus asked for stuff, and I mean, I can't do everything. Bogus said, "Can you guzzle some scotch and sound like a man?" Like, bro, I can only do so much. But I did find. And I actually think this one's a better call, and I was more sure about it. I thought the Phoenix Suns were going to be awesome.
The Suns are going to be a Western Conference top four team. Not just because Phoenix was the best team in the bubble before they got eliminated. They had to make a remarkable run. They had to get some help. They made the run. They didn't get the help. I know that I'm hard on Chris Paul. Human beings are complicated. That includes athletes. We're all complicated people, and sometimes when you have an ornery personality, when you can be a little irascible, when you're too demanding, when you're a perfectionist, when people love or hate you, and I understand there's people listening who know me who are like, Ryder, you're talking about yourself. I get it. You have to find the right place and the right fit. I think Chris Paul has found that in Phoenix.
And it turned out that he had. And so, Bogish, you ask, buddy. I'm here on Braggadocio Monday, and I deliver. You sent... And I didn't get through all 101 points of the Andrew Bogish Writer Than You critique, but I got through the first 13, and that was kind of the focus of them.
Yeah, and I guess this now becomes mea culpa Monday for me, because I owe you an apology here. I thought I had you. I thought you were done. I thought I was proving that Writer Than You was just nonsense, but here we are. You are writer than us.
I love it.
At least about the Suns and the Hawks, so congratulations.
Let me ask you a question, and it's theoretical. I don't want you to get all freaked out. Would you be as impressed if a giant Tic Tac had descended from the sky on December 20th and told me that this was what was going to happen?
No, you know what?
Would that be cheating?
I've known for a while, I assumed for a while that there were some other life forms in and around here. So, like, I'm ready for that. I was not ready for the Suns and the Hawks to be good in the same NBA season, for the same man, one man, to predict that tandem goodness. No one could have seen that coming.
Other than our friends from... Now, I'll say this. our friends in the Tic Tac and the UFO Tic Tac may or may not have been equally as shocked by the Knicks. And they might be from the future. And they still did not see it coming. Are you guys going to try to go and, like, are they going to allow some spacing in Brooklyn and the Knicks for fans? Are you guys thinking? Because I'm going to my first sporting event tonight in, I guess, a year and a half. I'm a little bit less than that. I'm going to a Dodgers game. My friend Greg tonight. It's my one night off for literally the next whenever the hell July 25th is. I think is the last possible day of the finals. And I'm gonna spend it going to a Dodgers game. Not with my kids. Not with my wife. I'm gonna go and drink some beer and watch the Dodgers.
Sounds amazing. They got Shake Shack now too.
Oh man, I'm gonna come back like a lot heavier, which I don't need help with. Love Shake Shack. Not as good as In-N-Out Burger, but love some Shake Shack.
I think we're at 33% capacity supposedly for the games. I think there's like 6,000 people going to be let in for these games.
There is apparently a looming announcement any moment right now from Governor Cuomo here in New York that they are going to have vaccinated fan sections at the Garden and Barclays, which are new and will up the overall building usage to 50%.
How?
So they're upping.
How do they know? You get to bring your vax card?
So you can bring your vax card. I know in New York State, there is an app that gives you like a little, that you can put like in your phone wallet, a little thing that you can scan that confirms you're vaccinated and you're 15 days post second shot, if that's the way you went. But a lot of it is just, I guess, honor system. And you need to have your mask on when you're not in your seat. So when you could be around anybody else, your mask is on, you sit down, vaccinated section, mask goes off, and you're fine. But a lot of it is just, I guess, being trustworthy.
Yeah, that's the interesting deal. Because the vax card, like I was thinking about this, what happens to somebody who loses their vaccination card? How do you prove you've been vaccinated if, like me, like I went to two different places, right? It's not my doctor's office. I went to a vaccination center.
Yeah, I have mine. I scanned mine into my computer, so I have a copy of it that way. But I don't know if that's good enough if you had to have it.
I took a photo.
Yeah.
I'm a real Mensa candidate. I'm a real real predictor. Real predictor over here. All right, who you got? Knicks or Hawks, gents? I'm going Hawks.
I don't want to go first on this.
I'm going Hawks.
I think you're going to go Hawks. I'm going to go Knicks.
Hawks in seven, which means I don't know. Anytime someone predicts in seven, translates to I don't know.
So Knicks in seven then. Right back at you.
There you go. Yeah, I'm not sure. Here's my concern about the Knicks. And I think that long term they're going to be in great shape because I think they'll go out and they'll get a massive piece. I've just seen enough of their big games where they're in every game and they're gritty and they're tough. But they have trouble scoring in the half-court offense late in games. And I worry in a close game, and I think they'll be close, I think Atlanta is more likely to be able to produce some difficult scoring opportunities to create some shots than the Knicks will be, despite the first bout Hall of Fame surety of Julius Randle that has been espoused across this fine network in America.
They're built to hang in
somehow
these games.
Trae Young is better, and I'm still picking the Knicks in seven.
Yeah.
Well, you think Trae Young's better? I mean, if Trae Young's better than Randle, then Trae, because if Randall's Bosch, then so Trae Young is, I mean, is he LeBron? He's Dwayne Wade?
He's not big enough to be LeBron. Let's go more. Yeah, let's go Wade. Let's go Wade.
Okay. I mean, that's a huge, I can't get it out of my head now. I covered Chris, and he's a great guy, and obviously a terrible way for his career to end. The last interview, I think one of the last interviews he ever did was with me, like on his way out that last game before they sort of shut it down. But when I saw Chris was going to be in next year's Hall of Fame, all I could think about was Julius Randle, which is wrong. Have you guys seen Promising Young Woman? It's like a scene from that, only that's a lot darker. Amazing movie. Have you seen it, Andrew?
Yeah, we talked about
it. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right.
I hated the ending. You
hated it.
You liked it.
Oh,
yeah.
It's terrible. It's a terrible
movie. Like the movie, like the first 98% of it, not the end.
It makes me feel better because, like, it's nice that even you can have terrible takes sometimes. Like, that occasionally
you
can swing and miss. Thank you. I mean, I feel it's nice
start
when
tomorrow's note.
You know, it's like
watch Promising Young Woman get better clue of ending.
You know, it's like I don't know, Ryan Gosling not being attractive to my wife for like one, like Lori seemed like, oh, he's not good looking in this case. That was a terrible analogy. Swung and missed there. See, it's me all the time. It's you occasionally. Who are you taking over there, DiBenedetto? I see you hiding.
Yeah, I don't want to do that. So you and I agree. I think the Knicks are built to be in every game, but I don't know that they're built to close any of them. But I don't want to be raining on this parade. I want to believe. So I will say the Knicks win it in six, all on grit.
Cowards. Oh, excuse me. I had a little tickle.
Come on, man.
That was me. That was bogus. Cowards. Now where's my phone? All right. Andrew. Having delivered on Braggadocio Monday for you, what's going on? Like, what else is shaking out there?
Well, we've already heard LeBron's mind trick calling Steph Curry his MVP this season. Laker teammate Jared Dudley going even farther to tell you how tough the Lakers have it here in the play-in tourney.
It will be the hardest challenge any team has ever had in NBA history. And the reason why I say that is you're going to first play in game. I know the Warriors aren't the Warriors of old, but you still have Steph Curry, an all-time
Lakers
great.
Warriors follows Spurs Grizzlies on Wednesday. L.A. or Golden State will be the 7 seed face the Suns, increasing the difficulty of that road. The loser plays the Memphis San Antonio winner for the 8 seed and the Jazz. LeBron did tweak his right ankle in last night's season-ending 110-98 win over New Orleans, but said he'll be fine for Wednesday. The East takes its turn tomorrow with the Celtics and Wizards playing for the spot alongside the Nets. Their loser faces the Hornets Pacers winner for number 8 and the Sixers. The Bucks and Heat, the 3-6 matchup in the East. It's Knicks Hawks in the 4-5. Denver Portland, Clippers Mavs out west. Marv Albert officially retiring after the Eastern Conference final, ending his 55-year legendary career. The 2021 class for the Basketball Hall of Fame includes Paul Pierce, Chris Webber, Ben Wallace, and Julius Randle pre-imposter Chris Bosh. There's also Rick Adelman, Jay Wright, former WNBA star Lauren Jackson, and Big East Commissioner Val Ackerman. And Texas Tech's Mac McClung is staying in the NBA draft. Veteran defensive end Ryan Kerrigan leaving Washington but staying in the NFC East. Kerrigan signs with the Eagles after 10 seasons with the football team, his 95.5 sacks, the most in franchise history. The Padres, that is, got the final win on the diamond yesterday, 5-3 over the Cardinals. They're now 5-1 since Fernando Tatis Jr. tested positive for COVID a week ago. Playoff hockey yesterday, the Lightning won a thrilling Game 1 in Florida, 5-4. The Wild took its opener in Vegas, 1-0 in OT, and the Islanders won in OT in Pittsburgh, 4-3. The Pens have now lost 10 of their last 11 playoff games. And MLS last night, the Seattle Sounders improving to a league best, 5-0-1 with a 2-0 decision over LAFC. Bill, back to you.
Hey, Bogus, can you help me with a math thing? I'm not good at this. I played Tom in fantasy baseball last week in our fantasy baseball league, and I got, so it's a 5x5 league. I got 8, and he got 2. Can you give me a sense of sort of like who won and by what degree? So it looks like it was,
right.
Tom looks happy. It looks like it was 8 me, 2 Tom.
So again, this is how do I put this delicately? So that's like Tom playing Julius Randle in basketball and losing 8-2. That's just kind of how this went. Does that make sense?
I'd be pretty happy with that.
Yeah, I could have beat you 10-0.
Exactly. I'm satisfied. I thought it was about to be 10-0, and I was gonna have to come in here and face that today. So just putting some points on the board, good enough for me.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie. Your late save hold flurry and my co-manager Reed Forgrave deciding Adam Wainwright was a good move to make while I was flying did not help me.
Oh yeah, you picked them up off me, so that's never a good thing. Don't pick
you
up
drop.
Anybody I drop. Yeah.
Don't. If I'd known it was
the funny thing
goods.
Is too, my team probably had their best week of the season so far too, and I was 2-8.
This was definitely like a Mike Tyson's punch out moment. My team just went off. I mean, this is a it was a beast
week.
Of a week.
Well done.
I also have the best record in the league, just in case anybody's wondering.
Well played.
Who the top dog is.
It ain't me.
Braggadocio Monday. Thank you, Bogus, for the help with the math. I struggle with the numbers.
My pleasure.
Appreciate
it. Least I could do for you.
Appreciate you. Man, we're such good friends until the aliens come and separate us all. At Andrew Bogish on Twitter, Tom DiBenedetto may have had a rough week at fantasy baseball, but he's still crushing it as the producer of this show, and he's going to bring those skills to the forefront. Buy or sell all the topics we haven't hit yet and a take on each one. Next on CBS Sports.
What side will Bill take on the biggest issues in the world of sports? It's time for today's edition of Buy or Sell on Writer Than You.
All right, Bill, future Hall of Famer Albert Pujols found a new home this weekend after his release by the Angels last week, and he will remain in Southern California with the defending champion Dodgers, where he will provide bench, pinch hitting, and first base depth. He'll make $420,000 from the Dodgers. The rest of his $30 million salary will, of course, be covered by the Angels. Buy or sell the Dodgers' decision to take a chance on Albert Pujols?
I'll buy it.
Buy.
I don't think he's going to play a lot. I don't think he's going to be significant to what they attempt to do. But obviously, Dave Roberts, the manager, or Andrew Friedman, the president of baseball operations, or both of them in consultation with each other, believe that his presence, his greatness, his experience, I mean, he's one of the greatest living baseball players on earth. I mean, that's what he is, will have an impact in that clubhouse, in that dugout. And I think those guys have certainly shown that they know what they're doing. And it's a very cool thing for Albert Pujols to be able to continue his career. Limited though it's going to be, I think, in terms of effectiveness, with an organization or team that will be playing meaningful baseball every game of the year.
All right, so there were some NFL rookie minicamps this weekend, which means there's plenty of rookie hype flying around already, and coaches speaking to the media again. Here's new Texans coach David Culley pumping up a name that you're going to have to get used to, their third-round pick at quarterback Davis Mills.
We really love what he's all about. We love all the intangibles that he has. He's a prototype NFL quarterback, and we feel good to have him. He's smart. He can make all the throws. And we feel good and feel fortunate that we were able to get him when we got him.
Buy or sell, Houston's quote-unquote excitement about Davis Mills is anything more than face-saving over the Deshaun Watson saga.
I will buy straight face-saving.
Buy!
I mean, Davis Mills is a game-changer. And then, like, tears, they say, as the tears fall down their cheeks. The Deshaun Watson story, and there's not a lot to say. There's not a lot more that we can say because there's not a lot more that we know. Remains one of the biggest NFL stories on the face of the planet, not just this year, but in general. Think about the amount of time that we spent talking about Tom Brady and Deflategate and missing four games. I mean, this is Deshaun Watson at the beginning of the pinnacle of his skills, facing, and maybe rightfully facing, the end of his career, or maybe some team, Texans or otherwise, plowing through the reasons he shouldn't play. And again, we don't know, and allowing it to happen. Whatever's going to follow will be one of the most significant NFL stories, I think, in my lifetime.
Tone was a little bit different in Chicago as Matt Nagy once again backed up Bears' social media team in insisting that Andy Dalton is currently on the top of the QB depth chart. Quote, Andy is the starter. Andy's going to get the one reps, end quote. Nagy acknowledged that the plan after that is murky and even admitted that Dalton is, quote, essentially a rookie as well after only having joined the organization 2 months ago. Buy or sell there is any need for Nagy to name a QB hierarchy right now?
I mean, I'll sell. Nagy, I mean, here's what's going on. I sort of understand it, and I'm probably a little hard on Nagy because he subtracts from the sum of all human competence when it comes to the National Football League. But they did make Dalton a promise, right? They made him a promise and he was the quarterback one. And it's really simple in any negotiation. Don't promise what you don't have to, and under promise and over deliver. But I'm sure they're trying to avoid, think about the toxic nature of lying to a guy and telling him he's the QB1, bringing in the actual QB1, and then wanting that veteran to treat that rookie well and have a culture that's conducive to learning. I mean, I think Justin Fields is going to be successful, but if anybody can screw it up, it's Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy. Way to go, guys. Morons.
All right, so our guy Urban Meyer also caused quite a stir this weekend with comments about usage of first-round running back Travis Etienne during the minicamp. This coming after his post-draft comments about the player causing controversy because Meyer said he considered Etienne to be a potential third-down back. This weekend, he had the former Clemson star work out exclusively at wide receiver during Jacksonville's rookie minicamp, and here was Urban explaining that logic.
I don't think it's going to be any different than the first years at the other places. We've always taken the approach. We're going to try to win. Every decision, everything associated with the organization is going to try to win. And
that was not it. My bad. This was it.
He's the leading rusher in ACC history. So for him to run inside zone and power and zone right now, we thought let's just, at the worst case scenario, you have a running back with skill set of a wide receiver. Best case scenario, you have a hybrid player that can do both. And that's what we're hoping to develop.
So there you go. He's looking to turn Etienne into a hybrid player. Buy or sell, this qualifies as yet another Urban Meyer red flag.
Yes.
Buy.
Yes. And there are some coaches, if I'm being honest, if Andy Reid had done this, I would have given Andy Reid the benefit of the doubt. But Urban Meyer has not earned that, and it is so head-scratching in terms of where they drafted him, what they said when they drafted him, how they're using him now. Genius often looks like idiocy to those of us who are not geniuses. So maybe that's what's going on. But I'm in a position now, Tom, where I have to either believe Urban Meyer is an NFL genius, smarter than most people in the NFL, or I believe what my eyes tell me, which is he's going to be Urban Meyer in dysfunction. So I'm going with the latter until he shows me it was the former.
Well, let's keep going down this road since I fired that clip accidentally. That is also an interesting clip. It was Urban being asked how different the process he expects to be between this year and year one at his prior stops in college, and here was his response to that.
I don't think it's going to be any different than the first years at the other places. We've always taken the approach. We're going to try to win. Every decision, everything associated with the organization is going to try to win. And that includes training, practice, draft, free agency, et cetera.
So same deal. Buy or sell, you got any red flags in that response?
I mean, you can buy that, baby. The kingdom comes.
Buy!
I mean, nothing's going to be different, you know. We're going to be competing against Florida State, play a bunch of college teams. We're hoping our scholarship kids will develop, and we might redshirt. Oh, hold on. Hey, not Urban, it's a little different. Apparently, it's different. Any other questions? Awesome. It's going to work out great.
All right, I don't even want to get into this last topic, but quickly, I'm sorry to do this, but your Barcelona, your beloved Barcelona.
Sell you.
Yeah,
sell you.
Sell me.
You're sold.
Sell.
I mean, we'll come back to this.
Read it.
We'll come back to this later
it.
In the week because these are big questions. We don't even have time for them here, but this could be the end for Lionel Messi. This could be Lionel Messi's last week as a Barcelona player. That'll be the tease for later in the week.
I mean, I'll sell that.
Sell.
But I don't know if you're asking. I'll buy that Ronald Koeman's gone.
Buy.
My brother just put like $100 down that Koeman's going to be Tottenham's new manager at 20-1. I like Koeman, but it was I don't even want to talk about it. It's a nice little amount of some ash in my mouth to close the show. Nice. You gave me Nagy and Barca and Urban. Cool.
Fantasy payback, baby.
Yeah, the quote community. Cool. All right, Bill Ryder with you. Thank you for hanging. Appreciate you. The show is Ryder than you. And we'll be back here tomorrow. Do it again. Hope you're back with us on CBS Sports Radio.